You are never the smartest person in the room. The moment that you feel that you are is the moment that you really have failed. My wife says to me, Connor, money will come back to you, time won't. Mm-hmm. So my advice to myself would be...
Are you ready to know what you don't know about Privacy Pros? Then you're in the right place.
Welcome to the Privacy Pros Academy podcast by KZNT Privacy Experts, the podcast to launch, progress, and excel your career as a privacy pro.
Hear about the latest news and developments in the world of privacy.
Discover fascinating insights from leading global privacy professionals.
And hear real stories and top tips from the people who've been where you want to get to. We've trained people in over 137 countries and counting.
So, whether you're thinking about starting a career in data privacy,
or you're an experienced professional,
this is the podcast for you.
Welcome to another episode of the Privacy Pros podcast. Today, we've got an amazing guest, a seasoned privacy professional with a wealth of experience guiding organizations towards responsible data practices. And we'll be unpacking the secrets of privacy by design. So coming up for you, we've got why companies need to bake privacy into their products from the start, how AI can both be a threat and a tool for better privacy, and some real life examples for you to get inspired by where privacy isn't just an afterthought. So joining us today, we have Connor Hogan, who is a passionate privacy advocate, trust advisor, and risk consultant with over 15 years experience advising clients all over the world. He currently oversees BSI Group's global privacy, delivering strategic advisory and operational support to clients across the Europe, the Americas, and Asia. Connor is a regular industry contributor, thought leader, and privacy by design advocate. He holds numerous qualifications and is a member of the Institute of Operational Privacy Design Standards Committee. In his spare time, Connor loves playing American football. He mentors his local Coda Dojo and enjoys spending time with his family and going to the gym. Connor, welcome to the Privacy Pros podcast.
Thank you very much, Jamal. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you. But I have a question for you before we get into the nitty-gritty. If you could make an office rule that everyone had to follow for a day, what would it be?
Oh, talk to somebody who you haven't talked to in a while. Because for me, being in an office, it's a real social aspect to working in a company. And actually, post-pandemic, working means we're 95% remote. I'm definitely 95% remote. So for me, if I find myself in an office, talk to somebody who I haven't talked to in a while. Talk to somebody who maybe you've never talked to before, and you just might learn something. For me, every day is a school day. Have that eagerness to learn, eagerness to find out new things.
I like that one, because one of the things that I really used to value when I used to work in the office a long time ago now is actually just those conversations that are not focused meeting conversations that you're just having, you're bouncing ideas across, maybe you're just getting to know each other a little bit so you understand how to communicate better. One of the biggest challenges that I find with privacy professionals is that breakdown in communication sometimes. And what I've noticed is when you spend more time with people, you build that rapport. So people are a lot more generous in their approach. And I think one of the challenges with this remote work environment is people are really focused on what they need to be, which is great. But at the same time, we're forgetting the emotional intelligence and the rapport that just exists naturally as a byproduct of actually being in the same building, being in the same office, seeing people for lunch, standing in the same queues. And I think that is also very important for really fostering high quality teams that perform well. So I'm a big fan of that. If I was in your office, I would definitely respect that every single day.
Do you know what's interesting as well, though? For me, a rule for a rule's sake is not good, right? Just to have a rule is not good. Office culture is fantastic. And I'm a people person. I think that's why I've been a consultant for the entirety of my career, because I get to meet different people in different organizations, different countries with different norms, different approaches to things. And it's just a fantastic experience to be able to have that varied day. And working remotely, I think we're all guilty of having back-to-back calls from morning till night. And it's exhausting because you're always on. Those little water cooler moments are so important, I think, in remote teams where you've got space. And it could be hard to create it for remote teams, but that space to just learn a little bit about your colleagues, shoot the breeze, talk about the football results last night or what musical you saw over the weekend or just the normal non-work conversations that you typically strike up with your colleagues. It's a great segue, but when you bring that back into team building and you bring that back into the world of data protection and privacy, that's where you can really build relationships in your organization as a consultant into your clients within the industry, where you get to know people and then you'll surface matters that you really need to focus on. And all the risk assessments, all the surveys, all of the detailed technical controls that you put in, they're all fantastic. But actually, sometimes it's just overhearing a conversation in the canteen or at the coffee dock where you go, oh, geez, I think I need to look at that, or I need to talk to this project or product manager about something because that doesn't seem quite right. Or maybe I need to give them some steering in the right direction. And so, yeah, that's a great question to start the conversation, Jamal. What's the one office rule? Whilst rules sometimes are made to be broken, and I'm a big believer sometimes in the right circumstance of begging for forgiveness as opposed to asking for permission. My rule, if I could have it, was just talk to people. We're social creatures at the end of the day. And for me, that's a big part of why I think I love what I do.
Rather than ask for permission is probably a big part of what's helped me in my career, and not just in my career, in my personal life as well, achieve some of the things I've managed to achieve. Because if you're sitting there waiting for permission, some things are never going to happen. Now, what do you see as the role of privacy pros in incentivizing and embedding privacy by design principles within the actual business?
Multifaceted, all-encompassing. To be honest, I think most people involved in privacy and data protection would probably be guilty of focusing on the low-hanging fruit and maybe the policy updates and the privacy notice and trying to figure out and navigate what Europa is. And all of that is fantastic, absolutely. But I think there's a big shift needed in most organizations' mindsets around privacy being the compliance overhead that it typically is viewed as, and a cost center to one that actually just baked into the very fundamentals of what the organization does. And that's at every level, right? So that's from the junior, the trainer, the new starter, all those new hires, all of the way up through middle and senior management, right up to the board and the exec management teams. Because unless and until privacy is just something that we're all naturally aware of, invested in, and able to bring to the table, then I think privacy pro's job and the role of the DPO and anybody who's involved in data protection is to advocate the positive aspects of why people should start thinking that way. And obviously in a utopian sort of privacy world where everybody thinks about privacy much like they think about just logging on to their work PCs in the morning, it's just ingrained in them, until that is a reality, maybe it won't ever be, right? Then I think there's always going to be the need for us to just be advocates for it, educating, making people aware, showing people what does privacy by design actually mean? Because it's a lovely trope to just, yes, cite and say, oh, we need to adopt a privacy by design approach. It's so abstract to people. And I think that's the biggest challenge in terms of actually embedding it within organizations today. Unless you've got technical privacy teams, unless you've got technical engineers that understand privacy at that engineering and dev level, privacy engineers as such, then technical privacy by design is very complex for organizations to achieve. And at a principle level, great, like we can talk about privacy first and minimization of data and all of the real beautiful principles that privacy by design brings together in a concept. But it is just that, it's conceptual. And until we reach that point where both the technical teams, the policy folks, the privacy compliance people, information security, we're all talking the same language and singing from the same hymn sheet, if you want. I think overall, our role is to incentivize and demonstrate, well, why organizations should implement privacy by design at the principles level and at the technical compliance level, where possible, and demonstrate through meaningful illustration of the upside. And that sort of reinforces then itself. The more self-sustaining evidence you can provide back to your board in terms of cost management and return on investment is sometimes very difficult to demonstrate, I think, for that conceptual privacy by design approach. But from that board level down, right through to making it a fundamental part of onboarding, of awareness, and just reinforcing that message, I think our role is front and center.
That's really interesting. It sounds like what you're saying to me is we need to make it part of the DNA of the organization, of the culture, of the values. And it basically exists as by default in everything that we do. Everyone is educated on privacy from the beginning. So whenever they're thinking about something, they've always got this foundational beginning or understanding of, hey, we do everything from a privacy lens, from a privacy focus. And that's where you're talking about baking that privacy by design, educating them, awareness, all the way from the new joiners through every department, all the way through to the executive. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And I know you work quite closely with Jason Kronk at the IOPD, and we've had him on the podcast before, and it's essentially the same kind of advocacy message that he's also evangelizing as well. So I really value that and I recognize that. Following up from that, what's the actual coolest example you've seen of privacy by design in action?
Do you know what? That is a very difficult question to answer, because for me, when you talk about the coolest example, is actually where I've seen product teams and project teams and project managers get it. It isn't necessarily, oh, this is a really cool application of technology, or we identified something and we discussed it ad nauseum through steerco meetings or anything like that. It was actually when a client of mine that is involved in bringing consumer-facing apps into app stores and supporting their customers develop apps for various different things, whether it's for online shopping or for finance management and these kinds of things. And actually, what was really interesting was when they brought us on board, they asked us not only to assess, let's say, their security and software design lifecycle methodology, but they said to us, what else should we be considering in the design and build phases? And obviously, I was a big privacy advocate, still am, and I was like, well, you have to consider privacy here, because what markets are you moving into? Where are your customers based? What sort of due diligence are they going to do on you before they award you contracts, etc.? They're like, oh, yeah, GDPR, that thing. I was like, yeah, that thing. Right. But it's not just GDPR anymore. Right. We see the privacy by design requirements and privacy by default requirements popping up in all sorts of jurisdictions within new and evolving legislation. And indeed, then now considering where we're going with sort of new technologies, new regulations that are going to stand up around regulating those as well. So we help them build their security and privacy first SDLC approach, and they got it. And it was mind-blowing to me that actually this organization was now not only going to be delivering a like one product or one delivery of a product to a client that integrated privacy and security by default, actually it was going to be from then on. So any other customers, their standard approach to designing the functional requirements that their clients have asked for within the context of privacy and security first. And for me, that was revolutionary. And I just get a great kick out of that, because what I love about my job isn't that I stand there and I say, this is what the GDPR says. Here's the Article 15 rights that you need to abide by. Here's 35, here's 25. It's actually way more meaningful than that, because it's education and advocacy. So it's actually bringing people with you. And when I see meaningful impact, and I work for an organization that exists to have impact on the world, and that fundamentally aligns, I think, with my personal views. Ultimately, what impact can I make in every single client interaction I have? And so when you ask me what's the coolest example, it's actually where I see technical product people and technical product and project managers understand what it is and start to bake that in to every conversation that they're having. So when they're looking at builds and they're looking at those sprints, it's actually, hold on a moment, how can we make this better from a privacy standpoint? We don't actually need all of the client file. We just need to take this little bit. And then you move on into much more technical assessments and like privacy red teaming, which for me is just really cool, because I work with a bunch of red teamers in our security testing practice an awful lot, and we do offensive security work for clients. And now we're able to do effectively offensive privacy work for clients, where we take that offensive security approach to finding vulnerabilities and potentially exploiting them, to finding where an API is taking way much more data than actually it needs to, and highlighting that back as a compliance risk. So when it comes to those coolest examples, it's really nerdy focus on actually making people understand and helping people understand what privacy by design and default is in action rather than that conceptual abstract thing that I think an awful lot of people find it to be.
Wow, that's quite dashing, because you mentioned quite a number of things in that answer there. One of the things that really resonates with me is where you talk about impact. And one of the things that we're really focused on here at the Privacy Pros Academy and also at Kaysian is making sure that we work towards a world where every woman, every man, and every child enjoys freedom over their personal information. So impact and legacy is very big for us, and it drives everything that we do. But one of the goals that we have as consultants when we're serving our clients is we measure if we're doing a good job by saying, have we empowered the people, the processes, and the actual place so much so that we're redundant, they don't need us anymore. And that's the way I take the approach to consultancy, is we should be so good and we know you've done a job right when the client doesn't need you anymore. So when you're saying that the privacy or the technology team have actually gone and created a framework for the sales development lifecycle, and they've embedded and cooked privacy into all of that lifecycle, and that's the approach that they take, and it's actually quite exciting.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Because one of the things we do here as well in BSI is we support our clients in an outsourced DPO role. And so we have a team of DPOs that we either take that regulatory role if a client is mandated or feels they're mandated or has the legal advice and situation that they have the mandatory appointment requirement, or they volunteer a DPO and we can do that. Or we support their in-house DPO in what we call our virtual DPO offering. And actually, I always say to my team, and even internally to my commercial stakeholders inside in BSI, that the measure of us doing a good job is that our client no longer needs us to be their DPO. And ultimately, I'd nearly say that unless our clients really just like us being around, right? And I know I have some clients that thankfully they do like us being around, and we have that trusted advisor relationship. Realistically, most of our client engagements for things like DPO services, we know there's a finite timeline on them, because if we're doing our job correctly, our clients will no longer need us. They will get it. And so for me, the DPO role, and indeed the technical privacy manager's roles at some level, anybody who's involved in privacy, there's huge advocacy, there's huge awareness, huge training, huge approach to actually just bringing people, I know it's a cliche, but on the journey of privacy, what it actually means, rather than it being this compliance thing. Oh, the law says this. Yes, the law does says that. The law is also an ass, right? Just talk to any lawyer anywhere around the world and they'll say that. But ultimately, we know that our job almost is as a caretaker role of that DPO, whether it's to establish the office, build the culture, enable the organization to be successful and adopt that monitoring role that is there under the GDPR, UK GDPR today, and eventually hand it off. So effectively, we do ourselves out of a contract. But ultimately, that's a win for me in some weird sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, completely take the same approach philosophy. And a challenge sometimes becomes when consultants or when people think that they're actually the captain steering the ship rather than you're the guide that's helping them get to where they need to get to. And I prefer to take the latter approach, is, hey, we're here to guide you. You're on the journey. You know where you need to get to. And we're just here to make sure that you get there in the most smoothest, efficient, and in most enjoyable way possible.
I completely agree. I just want to say one small point, because I'm sure like us, you work with lots of lawyers and both the internal and external counsel. And when we're appointed, for instance, as the DPO, I'm not a lawyer. My team is not lawyers. We are operational privacy people. And we win work on the basis of, and work closely with lawyers, and the fact that we roll up our sleeves and get our hands dirty. And we'll always defer to legal advice. So when it comes to that position, you've got legal advice, you've got clients saying X, Y, and Z, our position is very clear. This is our interpretation. We're giving you the advice. And especially for the DPO, fundamentally, you have the DPO's advice. You are accountable for what you do with that advice. And accountability is, as far as I'm concerned, the biggest aspect of data protection compliance today. And privacy by design is a constituent element of that. But that advice, especially in DPIAs and on technical privacy reviews and, you know, offensive privacy red teaming, anything like that, DPO advice is just advice. So make of it what you will. I'll defer to legal advice always. I work with my legal colleagues all the time, internally and externally. But yeah, you're accountable. We're not steering the ship, as you said. We're just guiding the course for you. But it's up to you to make the turn.
Absolutely. Now, as we see this fascination with AI exploding, and it's only going to get bigger, at the end of the day, we've got to admit that whatever happens, whether we like it or not, AI is going to change the way everything is done. It's already changing the way things are done, but it's going to change the way we know everything to be. So as this AI technology continues to evolve, what are some of the key challenges and also the opportunities for integrating privacy by design principles?
A really good question, Jamal. And I think AI is definitely having a moment, and that's fantastic, because I do think and agree with you that it has the potential to be transformative, and it's already having transformative impact in various industries. In terms of challenges, I think as a profession, we need to be alert to the fact AI is complex. We're not necessarily all going to be AI experts overnight. And the level of technology development and the pace of that change is absolutely astounding in terms of the capabilities that are coming to our day in and day out. So the challenge really for us as a privacy profession is to be able to help raise risks with our leadership and get our arms around it a little bit from a compliance perspective. Because let's face it, it's just another technology. It was blockchain prior to that, right? It'll be something else after AI. It's just another technology change that organizations are facing, and they're either designing, developing, or implementing it. And so the core processes that we've always looked to establish around due diligence for suppliers and vendors, around privacy by design in software development and in development processes and in change processes, all of those are just key, critical things to focus on in an AI context. And I think really the education of ourselves, learning about AI so that we can advise in context and not just in abstract, I think that's another challenge, because AI isn't new either. Like, I talk about it being this new technology. I think the scale at which it's accessible now is the novel aspect to it. But it's not a new technology. It's been around for a very long time. It's just now available at a scale that it had never been before. And critically, its capabilities are at an advanced level that maybe obviously it hadn't been before. And we're seeing increasingly it develop really quick. But in terms of like opportunities, the core concepts in terms of privacy by design and integrating privacy by design into AI is exactly what we would want to do. Under the new regulations that are coming in Europe, for instance, you need a risk management system for artificial intelligence. You need to understand the level of impact that the AI system that you're going to build or deploy will have on people in your organization or could have on society. And then you need to be able to manage and mitigate that. That's all language we speak, because in the privacy world, we talk about impact assessments for data protection, for privacy. It's exactly the same thing. So I think there's a huge opportunity for us to really bring privacy to the fore. And realistically, AI, it's really just a technology that is at the intersection between security and privacy and obviously governance. And really, the opportunities that exist there for us are those that have already been there. They're just way more acute because of the potential impact that some of these technologies might have on people. And when we talk about impact as a privacy pro, we're always focused on things like impact to fundamental rights, fundamental freedoms, and privacy violations. You know, I'm a Solove geek. So when it comes to your privacy and looking at how people can be impacted, it's all around things like information aggregation and other abuses that could come to bear. I think one of the biggest opportunities we have as a profession is, number one, educate ourselves, right? Continue to be relevant to our clients and to our senior stakeholders in our organizations, but also help them manage what really could be a very complex risk landscape in terms of them either introducing AI and not knowing it, are potentially walking into significant compliance and risk problems today that will only really materialize in the future.
Great. I was at the International Data Protection Conference as a speaker. The topic I had to speak about was balancing AI and privacy. And during that delivery, I echoed a lot of the sentiments that you have there. So I remember I did my first AI DPIA back in 2018. We called it a robot back then, right? And it was there to do processes. So it was what we call artificial narrow intelligence. And I think it's captured the imagination of the public and a lot more people, and people are really talking about it because of this generative AI. And as we're seeing the AGI, the artificial general intelligence developing, and more people actually taking that into products you can buy off the shelf, whereas before you would have had to have a team developing it. But What I resonate most with what you're saying and what my sentiments are is one of the philosophies I have, again, is also how you do one thing is how you do anything. And you said it's just another technology. And that's exactly the kind of approach that we need to get is what Connor's saying is keep calm and carry on. How you do one thing is how you do anything. You try and understand, you get familiar with it, you get some guiding principles, you identify the risk, and then you just find ways of either mitigating that risk, avoiding that risk, or saying, you know what, we're going to accept the risk. But make sure you do your due diligence, make sure you do your assessments, and make sure you have a way of measuring that. And as long as we have those kind of guiding principles, you mentioned Solow's taxonomy of harms and a couple of other things, and now we've got regulations, and you've got the NIST framework, there is more than enough tools out there already to help us make informed decisions to make sure that we can use AI responsibly. So I completely echo and support everything you've said there. Now, in our careers, we all face challenges. Can you walk us through a particularly challenging moment or a story in yours, how you tackled it, and what was the lesson or lessons it left you with?
That's, again, some really good questions, Jamal. I think the biggest challenge I faced was the overarching response that we had as a people and as a society to the pandemic. As I mentioned, I'm a very social person, and I have a young family, and being a father to small kids, and balancing the sort of the requirements and the pressures of my job and the demands of it really meant that I wasn't always home. I was traveling, planes, trains, automobiles, types of things. And the pandemic forced me to actually reevaluate that significantly and completely, if I'm honest. And I found myself at home. The kids weren't in school, trying to juggle the work-life balance in a completely new way. But it actually opened up my eyes to what's important in life. And my wife has a saying, and every opportunity I get to relay the wisdom of my wife to the world, I do. She says to me, Connor, money will come back to you, time won't. When I look at my kids, I see that in abundance. They want time with you. And whilst I was out busying myself and trying to forge a career for myself and very career driven, and I suppose that the challenge really that I'm talking about is that it forced me to really reevaluate what I was doing with my career in terms of decisions, where I was going, how long I was spending away versus the time that you'll never get back with your children when they're small and they're just looking to be held by their parents and feel like they can see you and be with you. I completely shifted my day. When the schools opened back up and I was still working from home, I was able to drop the kids to school, pick them up from school, took some time in the afternoon when I knew they'd be awake and be able to see me, and shifted my day such that I did work in the morning, gap in the mid-afternoon, and then work late into the evening. And it worked for such a long time. And even now, my colleagues, my clients even, are very familiar with my children just coming over and asking for something. And it's not this, I think you probably remember the poor reporter on the BBC News back in the early days, right? When he's shoving his children and his wife out the door. And I'm like, I was definitely that person. Whereas now I'm like, just come sit on my lap, say hello, wave to everybody. And for me, I don't know if it was challenging. It just completely shook my value system up. But I think the lesson it's taught me is that you can still build a career, you can still be successful and still give your family the time, not that they deserve, but the time that they need, because that's the right thing to do. And the new working norm that I found myself in. And again, this is coming from somebody who enjoys being in the office, having those water cooler moments that we spoke about earlier. It's just a different world that we live in today. And I think it's the realization in practice that time and money, they're not mutually exclusive, but they're also not mutually inclusive. You have to make clear decisions and set boundaries. And I, for one, prior to the pandemic, was not good at separating work from home. Whereas now, I'm definitely getting better at it and being able to switch off. If, at the very least, just switch off the phone and pray that no clients have a complex data breach in the middle of the night, and just being able to spend time with the people who matter.
That's really profound. I'm just going to take a moment just to let that sink in, because I have a 2-year-old daughter, and the thing that I love most about the way I get to work is the amount of time I get to spend with her. Because prior to this daughter, I had 3 children, and God took all 3 of them away. So when we was blessed with this gift, I was like, she's the center of my world. Like, everything revolves around her. But at the same time, I've got clients, I've got mentees, I've got responsibilities and obligations. And if I think about my life prior to the pandemic and many years before that, when I was contracting or in employment roles, where I live in London, the commute is at least 45 minutes to an hour, right? Sometimes an hour and a half. So you're losing about 2 hours just trying to get into the office, another 2 hours back. That's 4 hours that I could be spending with my daughter doing the things that are meaningful. Like you said, money will come and go. And what I find increasingly is I'm actually trying to buy my time back by delegating responsibilities or tasks to people who could do it so I can spend that time with my family. Now, at the same time, I have to be honest, and I have to say, like, that work-life balance thing is something I do struggle with, which is why I'm trying to listen to you and take notes from what you're saying, because I got that perspective shift when I held her in my hands, right? Because I remember I was in the hospital, I had my laptop with me, because you don't know what's going to happen. Like, you're there, you don't want to miss out on work, so you're doing what you need to do, being career-driven, people who really want to make a mark. And then the moment I held it in her hands, like, I don't even remember charging the laptop. I don't even know what happened to the charger. I think I ended up losing it.
Exactly. It all just fades, doesn't it? It becomes almost insignificant in those moments. Yeah. Our youngest is 2.5, and he's an absolute lunatic, if I'm brutally honest, right? He's an absolute lunatic at the moment. We wouldn't change him for the world. Funny enough, I was on a call yesterday with a former colleague of mine and his boss talking about a new product that they have in development. And he decided to have a strop in the kitchen where he grabbed 3 or 4 bananas and mashed them into the floor. And I'm like, this is just reality. I can see him in one corner of my eye. I was downstairs at the time having the call, because remote doesn't mean just sitting at my desk. It's at every room in the house or in the car or whatever. But it is like those moments, whilst in my opinion, it's important to have career aspirations and to be driven and to demonstrate to your family and to your children, especially what you can do if you put your mind to it. But it can't be at the expense of them. You put them front and center. And as you said, Kamal, they're the center of your world. And so I'm sometimes guilty of forgetting that as well, and getting caught up in the work, in client matters, in internal politics maybe, and just getting lost to the work. And don't get me wrong, I love what I do. I really do love what I do. But I love my family more. And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I was just taking a moment there earlier because I remember that perspective shift. I physically felt it. I just couldn't explain it. Everything that was so important to me, literally 3 minutes ago, I couldn't even care about. It was just strange. What just happened? So hearing someone else describe that, it just took me back. And it's quite moving. So thank you for sharing that. I might actually reach out to you for some parenting tips. Amy's turning 2 over the weekend, and she's already gone bananas and bonkers. She's having really big emotions over really silly things.
Do you know what? I'm not one to be given parenting tips at all. I'm almost looking for advice now at this point, because we've 3 boys and the youngest is 2, and he's just a lunatic. All my colleagues know him. He comes onto our calls. My clients know him at this point as well. He'll sit down and start drawing on my notepad, taking notes, and say, oh, daddy, work. I'll do some work now. But no, any tips you have, Jamal, I'll take them as well.
I think you're the expert out of the 2 of us when it comes to that. You've had 2 goes at it, and you're still a few months ahead with the 3rd. But if there is anything I can share, then I definitely will, but I'll be reaching out to you for that. Now, final question for you, Connor. Looking back, you've had a really colorful and decorated career. What advice do you wish you'd received at the beginning of your career? Or if you could actually look back at your younger self and give yourself a few pieces of advice based on the wisdom that you've accumulated now, what would that be?
I think back in my early stage of my career, I was uncertain as to what I wanted to do. And I graduated out of university in the midst of the global financial crisis. I was looking to leave Ireland. The economy here was absolutely on the floor. There was bailouts left and centre. And I honestly didn't see a future, at least in the short to medium term, in Ireland for me. And I was sad because I think, again, I'm a social person. Ireland's a very social country, but we went through some very dark times as a country and as a nation. And to see the brain drain from the country at that time was something that made me sad. And I nearly moved to London. I was all ready to move into a big 4 consultancy house there. And I got an offer to stay in Dublin with a 3-year training contract. Might not necessarily have been what I wanted to do, but I saw it as an opportunity to guarantee myself a little bit of time here. And I took it. But I probably took it out of comfort more than anything else. So my advice to myself would probably be take a risk, be curious and take a risk and go And just because economic circumstance indicates that you need to do something different, don't be afraid, especially at the early stage of your career. Go for it. Take that risk. Especially when you're young, there's less responsibilities, you have less commitments. And before that moment when the doctor or the nurse hands you a bundle of joy, if you're lucky enough and choose to go down that path, before you have commitments like that, seek out things, be curious and stay curious. If you think, even after 15, 20 years in the world of privacy and security and advisory, that everything, you don't, you absolutely do not. You are never the smartest person in the room. The moment that you feel that you are is the moment that you really have failed, I think, a trusted advisor for a client or as a leader. So be curious. Always seek out different opinions. Never be afraid to ask advice. Ask for feedback. Seek out that feedback. Don't just wait for it to be given to you as part of a performance review. That is, for some organizations, just a tick box thing. Mm-hmm. And don't take one person's word to be gospel either, because that one person has a perspective. Everybody has a perspective. Everybody has an opinion. So seek out as many of those as you possibly can and learn from those people around you, especially the good leaders that you will see either in the organizations that you're working for.
Thank you for sharing those. Some really great tips. And I'm grateful for you for sharing it with us, Connor.
Absolutely. And with all of that said, take all of this with a pinch of salt, carve your own path. And it's interesting to look back myself now at this point to see where I started and to see where I've come from and what I've achieved. But also, it excites me because you never know what the future holds. And again, to quote my wife, money isn't everything. Money will come back to you at some point somewhere. Time won't. So make the most of the time that you have. And yeah, just keep on keeping on, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Time is the most valuable asset that we all have, and it's very precious. Connor, it's been amazing having you on the show. We started off talking about privacy by design. And what I found through this podcast is it actually got more endearing and warmer than I actually thought. And I think that's a great reflection of who you are and the way you present yourself. So I'm really grateful to have had the opportunity to have this conversation with you. We spoke about AI and how we can look at that. We spoke about baking privacy by design in, and you ended with some great tips on some advice that we can all take and implement, and how you particularly had a challenging time and how you overcame that, particularly what you learned from that and the perspective shift that resulted in, and how you're much richer in your experience of living now than you was before that perspective shift. So I'm really grateful for you for sharing those with us. Now, before you leave, we always give your guest an opportunity to ask me a question. So what would you like to ask me?
Well, you said you lived in London. So do you have a soccer team?
So I was born just outside of Manchester in a small village, right? So I identify with the Manchester teams more than anything else. Blackburn would be my local team. In terms of Premier League, when I was growing up, it was Manchester United. But since Alex Ferguson have left, I found myself becoming very detached to the point where I don't even know what's going on right now. There is a youth team that we have here. So there's a football team called Wapping Youth FC. It's basically made up of disadvantaged kids in one of the local boroughs. And so I sponsor their kit and I take a keen interest in it. So that's who I'm rooting for right now.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And that's important, isn't it? Again, without getting too emotional or profound, the children, I think, are everything. And giving them every opportunity, regardless of where they've come from, what their background is, but giving them an opportunity to enjoy themselves, to thrive and to be the best that they could possibly be, that's fantastic. So it's great to hear that you sponsored them. I completely object to the fact that you're a failed Manchester United fan. I'm a Leeds United fan, and we've gone through more ups and downs than I would care to imagine, but I'd never turn my back on the team. So I tell you what, that's disgraceful, Jamal. You can't turn your back on your team, no matter who's in charge or how bad they might be doing. You should never do that.
Priorities changed, Connor. Priorities changed.
Oh, fickle are the football fans, that's for sure. And yeah, great. I'll keep an eye out for Wapping Youth then. That's fantastic as well.
Thank you for listening. Until next time, peace be with you.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, like and share so you're notified when a new episode is released.
Remember to join the Privacy Pros Academy Facebook group where we answer your questions.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're leaving with some great things that will add value on your journey as a world-class privacy pro.
Please leave us a 4 or 5 star review.
And if you'd like to appear on a future episode of our podcast,
or have a suggestion for a topic you'd like to hear more about,
please send an email to team@kzient.co.uk.
Until next time, peace be with you.